Hey folks, from David Goldstein.
And I'm Brian Brinkman.
You are tuned into a bonus episode of the Beyond the Pond podcast. Generally speaking, this is a podcast which Brian and myself use the music of Phish to introduce the listener to non-jam bands that we think that they might enjoy. We usually talk a little bit about Phish and relate them to some other bands. However, for this bonus, we're doing something a little bit different.
And we are talking about the War on Drugs, A Deeper Understanding, their fourth record, which is being released today, August 25th, 2017. If any of you who are longtime listeners of Beyond the Pond, you've probably heard the War on Drugs be spoken of a number of times. This is unquestionably the most anticipated record of 2017 for Dave and I, and we wanted to do a deep dive on our first impressions and thoughts of the record right as it came out. So, Dave, what are your first thoughts on A Deeper Understanding?
Well, for starters, he's been either here, like the record label, they've been releasing singles from this record at a pretty regular clip. I think by the time there was a stream made available today, there had already been four or five songs out. At the same time, I hadn't heard half the record, so today at the office, I had some extra time. I sat down and streamed the whole thing twice, and first impression, I'm extremely impressed. He really called his shot. He took the major label money, he took the complete artistic freedom, and he seems like he squirreled himself away to get it just right because he knew that he could do it. And based upon what I've heard today in streaming it, this absolutely sounds like the War on Drugs. It sounds like a very worthy successor to Lost in the Dream, but it sounds tighter, it sounds brighter, it sounds more involved, and it seems like everything that we liked about the last record, except bigger and more of it.
Yeah, I would agree with that 100%. I listened to this for the first time this evening, sitting out on my back patio. My first thoughts, first things I typed out, this is a fine-tuned, warmer, cleaner version of the War on Drugs without sacrificing any of their edge or soul that made Lost in the Dream, in my opinion, the best record of the decade thus far. As I'm listening to it, you know, I feel like Pain might be the best song I've heard all year. And then a couple songs later, In Chains starts, and I immediately say, wait, no, this is the best song I've heard all year.
In Chains, my God, that song.
I mean, that song, for me, sneaky pick from Lost in the Dream, kind of underrated pick that I just fell in love with as I listened to the record, you know, 50, 60, 70 times over and over again, was Burning, and
yeah.
This feels like the next step forward for Burning. Unbelievable song.
Yeah, when that song shows up, it comes after the 11-minute centerpiece, Think of a Place, which was actually first revealed in a Record Store Day release. I think we touched upon an earlier episode. It's 11 minutes and moody, and then In Chains comes in, and it's just, yeah, I mean, I thought exactly this is the burning of the album. This is This is the anthem. This is the one you obviously put a lot of time into it. It's got hooks galore. It could be, in a sense, the ultimate War on Drugs song. It's like the progression from the song Baby Missiles off Slave Ambient to Burning to kind of like he's perfected that form, I guess.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. And touching on Thinking of a Place, the first single that was released back in April, 11-minute epic song that just kind of comprises all of the sounds and the atmospheres that have really made the War on Drugs just such a compelling band over the last 10 years. I didn't really know what to make of when I saw the track listing come out, it being in the middle of the record, but it really fits well in terms of bridging those first four hits that came off with the backside of the album, most of which we had never heard before. I thought it was just a really fantastic bridge from side A to side B and just really fit in that slot perfectly. You know, one thing that I thought, and I was actually talking with a friend about this right after Up All Night came out, these songs all sound like memories. I don't know if I have, but I'm sure I've experienced in some hazy moment of life. I feel like I'm like just on the edge of touching some sort of a memory when I hear these songs. And I feel like that's like a huge thing that comes out of the style that Grandsil and the War on Drugs play within, like that those 80s heartland soundscapes that always just kind of sound like a feeling that's really close by to you, but not necessarily something that you can reach out and touch. I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
The album, the 2011 album, Slave Ambient. I mean, the first time I really started to get into that, I remember renting a car in Oregon with my wife, and we were driving up to, I think it was Mount Hood, listening to that record and seeing the tall trees and thinking it was very perfectly placed. But yeah, I mean, he specializes in very much almost like an 80s, you know, 80s Springsteen, 80s Mellencamp sound. I mean, if this had come out, let's say anywhere from 84 to 88, it would have been played to death on terrestrial AOR radio. And that's that's not a complaint at all. I happen to love that stuff. Yeah. Especially Bruce Hornsby very much looms large. Certainly the 80s Hornsby records with sounds like The Valley Road, Every Little Kiss, Look Out Any Window. Not so much The Way It Is, but the other songs from that album, they were very synth heavy. They had the gated drums. So ultimately, they were happened to be radio anthems. But you know, certainly the 80s have always loomed heavy with the War on Drugs as a music, sort of like putting Bruce Hornsby into a shoegaze blender, which I have zero issue with.
I think it's a great mix. You know, one thing that jumped out, I was finishing up the album. Grandsil really knows how to close records. You go back to Slave Ambient, Blackwater Falls is an absolutely fantastic closer. In Reverse, that was such a great cap to Lost in the Dream. Really like taking the idea of an album closer and just stretching it out. And you know, giving it that epic quality that makes you feel like you really just finished something special. You Don't Have to Go is right in line with all of those. I thought that was an absolutely beautiful and devastating and really heavy closer that just makes you want to go back and press play again on Up All Night and do the whole thing all over again.
Yeah, it's somewhat, when it progresses towards the end, it almost feels novelistic. It's got,
Yeah, there's totally.
There's a beginning, there's a middle, and there's an end. And the progression, it's very well sequenced, which in this day and age, a Spotify playlist is not always a given. But he's old school. He's 38 years old. I'm going to be 38 years old in a month. Obviously, it seems like he was raised on the same albums I was raised on. I don't know if he has any memories of being in the back seat of his mother's, like, mother's blue Chevy Eurosport, listen to Bruce Springsteen and John Mellencamp and Don Henley and Jackson Browne like I did. But it wouldn't surprise me if that were the case.
Yeah, I had a thought similar to that. You know, I was 2 years old when the Joshua Tree came out, and it's the first album I remember being played in regularity in my parents' house. And this record is coming out right at around the same time. My son's about to turn 2 years old. The idea of this record playing over the next 2 to 3 years with the kind of regularity that the Joshua Tree played when I was a kid, you know, just projecting the influence that this record could potentially have on his life is just almost too much to take in. But
it's comforting, right?
It's very comforting. It's very serendipitous in a lot of ways. You know, so one thing I wanted to talk with you about, you and I have talked obviously on this podcast and outside of this podcast at length about Lost in the Dream. That was an incredibly special record. I think we both went on record saying it was a masterpiece.
Oh, yeah.
I believe it's the best record of the decade. at times there are moments where I would say that it's the best record I feel like I've ever heard. It just hit me on so many levels. What do you think about this record? And obviously it's early, and you know I'm hesitant to even bring this type of stuff up, but what would you say about A Deeper Understanding after a couple listens compared to Lost in the Dream?
I would say time will tell, yeah. But it already, I know it has a lot of the qualities that I very much loved with Lost in the Dream.
Yeah.
I'm thinking that at some point it could reach that pantheon. I like the fact that it's 66 minutes long, that it takes its time. I think only one of the songs is under 6 minutes.
Yeah.
Which I think is like the fourth song on the record, the name of which tends to escape me at the moment. But yeah, I mean, what I loved about Lost in the Dream is that Adam Grandchild is clearly in love with sound. Like, you know, he pays attention to every sound on the record. He's a studio geek. There's lots of layers. There's lots of things to unpack and explore. But at the same time, while being obsessed with sound, he's a songwriter who knows how to make incredibly driving anthemic rock music. Songs like Burning, songs like Ocean Between the Waves, this makes you want to get in your car, your convertible, and just pour it on the highway at high speeds. And, you know, many of the songs, it seems, on Deeper Understanding accomplish the same beat. Like, I know I listened to it 4 or 5 times today. I can't wait to listen to it again. I've already pre-ordered the vinyl. And while, you know, I mean, Brian, you know, face it, you and me were fanboys, but we'd absolutely call him out if there was something that we didn't like. And yeah, I'm not.
Question.
And so far, it seems to me that what's great about him is that he plays to his strengths. He knows what sounds good. He stays in his lane. And he kind of has in his head, he knows exactly what he wants it to sound like. And he's willing to put the extra effort in to get that done. So in terms of a direct comparison to Lost in the Dream, you know, maybe the songs in Lost in the Dream will have more of a staying power. I was at a different place in my life when that record came out. My daughter had just been born, so I tend to associate a lot of it with that. In addition, when my daughter turned 1, I think you played Radio City Music Hall 3 days later, so my wife and I kind of, to celebrate her turning 1, we saw a lot of concerts that week. We saw Tame Impala, went to a Luna concert, then we saw the War on Drugs. So that kind of looms in my memory, in addition to the hundreds of dollars we spent on babysitters that week. So, you know, I mean, we will see where it ends up in the pantheon, but most importantly, he didn't flinch.
He didn't flinch. Kind of before I jump in, the song you were referring to, the only sub-6-minute song, is called Knocked Down, which I thought that was the there was an interview I listened to him with Chris Ryan about a week ago where he talked about the idea of making an L.A. record, and Knocked Down was really where I felt like I was listening to an L.A. record. I really enjoyed that song a lot. I'm in a very similar place with you with regards to Lost in the Dream. That was a very different place in my life. I was in the middle of traveling around the world. I just lost my uncle, who absolutely loved the War on Drugs, came back home, saw them a bunch of times with my brother and my dad. I remember distinctly us doing a road trip up to northern Wisconsin and getting a cabin and sitting out on the dock under just a blanket of stars, drinking way too many beers, and my dad saying 5 or 6 times repeatedly, "Jesus, what a fucking album." which was like, it was just like such a connection of this music that sounded like something from his age, from someone who was relatively closer in age to my brother and I. You know, and then a year later, I had a son, and I relate a lot of Lost in the Dream to those first few weeks and few months being a young father. Where I'm at now, I'm completely in a completely different place. Feel a heavier weight of the world, filled with worries I never even considered 3 years ago. I now know how to be a dad. I have a better sense of where I want to take my family, but I know how much harder it will be to get them where I want them. You know, there's more weight in the world at this point, and it'll be interesting for me to see how this record plays out through that, and if it has the same lasting impact for me that Lost in the Dream did. My first thought, and you know, I'm hesitant to even do this, but the only sense of criticism I would throw at Lost in the Dream in comparison to this is Lost in the Dream could be accused of having just a touch of filler throughout. One could make the argument the final 2 minutes of Under the Pressure, the song Disappearing, even the Haunting Idol, they were more experimentations rather than like fully realized moments of songs.
I love the Haunting Idol, but okay.
I don't get me wrong. It's don't get me wrong. It's a great song, but it feels like a pause in the record in some cases. Right. What's great about this is that they've halted all expansiveness and exploration to go for complete gold in every single song. And I would say, to make an apt Fish comparison, since this is traditionally a Fish podcast, it's almost like comparing a fall 2013 Fish jam with something from the late 90s that is 10 minutes longer, but maybe has a little bit of an added space that's not necessary.
Okay.
Less is more in this case, and they've done so much more with less. He's used all the money that he got for this record and all of the creative freedom in such a deliberate and intentional way that just adds to his sound. It's just, I love this record, and I'm just really interested to see where it goes and how it fits, you know, alongside or, you know, wherever it fits in comparison to Lost in the Dream.
I mean, War on Drugs, in that sense, it kind of strikes me as another band that both you and I love and have told people that we love, being The National, in the sense that with every National record, they hone their sound to the point where you think like, okay, they've taken the atmospheric sad bastard thing as far as it can possibly go. This record is great. I don't know what they're going to do next. And then they go and put out 3 years later, like another record of fantastic sad bastard music with just enough wrinkles in it to make you think, all right, this is also fantastic. Because what it really comes down to is they're just great songwriters.
Absolutely.
Like, you can have all the bells and whistles in the world, but if you can't write songs for shit, none of it's good. It doesn't matter. But if you can write songs like the Dessner Brothers and Adam Granchill can, and then, you know, you have the advantage of being able to play your strengths and putting all the bells and whistles on it and making it sound as good and as interesting as possible. Because like the National, War on Drugs, they sound great live. They put on a great live show, but they are hardcore studio bands. They will tinker and tinker and tinker away, but we benefit from it.
Yeah, and that, you know, last point was introduced really well in that Stereo Gum feature on this record that came out last week. Who was the guy that wrote that?
Mike Nelson, good dude.
Unbelievable comparison to Yankee Hotel Foxtrot, specifically the scene where Jay Bennett's adding just like spiraling noise to his guitar. As
like an egg timer?
Yeah, as they're recording Poor Places, which, you know, you can just hear that type of intricacy throughout this record. At the same time, I feel like you strip away all the effects and you put him up with just an acoustic guitar, and he's touring around the same theaters that Neil Young's playing in, like, 1971 and 1972.
Right. Like, what was the Neil Young? It was the archival release, the Massey Hall show.
Yeah, like, I mean,
he's playing, like, acoustic guitar, like, Needle and the Damage Done, Old Man stuff.
Exactly. And that's, you know, so, I remember when Lost in the Dream came out, there were all these just clips that came out of him randomly playing some of the songs on acoustic guitar, and you could just hear the origins of these songs in it. And I'm excited to hear songs off of Deeper Understanding from the same in the same sort of setting. I hope he continues to do that. That marketing campaign for Lost in the Dream felt unending and was always very exciting. Yeah, I don't know what they're going to do next, but I really love how this album refines their sound. And, you know, you take the National, for example, the clear turning point at this point would be to kind of start to fuck with his sound a little bit. I don't know how much I want him to, but I'm gonna go for the
like record. Have a Nebraska in him.
Yeah, just have a totally stripped down record.
Yeah, do like a stripped down album. Make your next album double live. Want to do something totally, totally 70s, 80s. You know that he could put out a fantastic live record. He could make that sound very good, a minimum amount of overdubs. Yeah, I mean, I'm just happy this one exists here. I'm sure that he will put out something probably very good in 3 to 4 years down the line. I've been pulling on the wire, but it just won't break. I've been turning up the dial, but I hear no sound. I resist what I cannot change, and I want to find what can't be found. As of today, this would rank in your overall 2017 list.
So I'm tempted to say it's my number one after one full listen. Nothing I've heard this year has given me the overall emotional, like lyrical, sonic, fluid hit. And I've heard some amazing records this year. I will say, unquestionably, this is in my top three. And depending on what's coming down the pike, I know that we're both really excited about the new National record that's coming out in 2 weeks, and have both heard some fantastic songs off of that. I think that live show that they played a couple weeks ago or a couple months ago, we got basically the whole album. I'm very
excited. More or less, the one in Paris, or the Pitchfork Paris.
Yeah, I'm very excited to dive into that, and knowing how I feel about the National, I could easily see that in my top two or three, so I would not be surprised if this ends up in my top two at the very least by the end of the year, but I'm tempted to kind of go out on a limb and say that this is my favorite record I've heard this year at this point.
Yeah, I would say easily in the top five of things I've listened to this year, maybe top three. Lately, I've been listening to a record by a guy named Luke Elliott, which I will talk about on the next Beyond the Pond podcast, which is absolutely slaying me. But even still, I would say, yeah, this record, certainly I have every reason to believe the forthcoming National album will be very good. I like what I like. And, you know, on one hand, it could say it could be very, very predictable to put an album like this rank so highly. But, you know, if it's good, it's good. It didn't have to be. You could have screwed it up, but you know, the War on Drugs have always been one of my favorite bands, which should be anticipated. If he pulls it off, it's going to be up there.
What would you say, just kind of from your first couple listens, what are two songs that really stick out for you?
In Chains, absolutely. That's the centerpiece, barn burner, emotional experience. I can't wait to drink double IPAs on the couch on Friday night and have a good cry song.
I know what you mean.
Aside from that, I mean, the one before, Thinking of a Place, even though I've heard it several times, the guitar solo on that song, it just feels like a cold fire. Like he's spouting like a blue flame, mm-hmm. if there is such a thing. Mm-hmm. Like even having listened to that song 10 or 15 times, I still can't quite figure out the guitar solo. It's really... That's another thing. I mean, it almost goes without saying at this point, but the guy's an incredible guitarist. Like, you want solos, he gives you solos. He gives you, I mean, pound for pound, he pulls off some of the most emotional guitar solos since, like, late 70s David Gilmour in terms of...
He gives you solos that are just ripping. He gives you hooks, and then his rhythm playing is just is gorgeous as well. I mean, he's got a really complete package from a guitar standpoint. Yeah, you know, I'll piggyback on your answer. And, you know, one of the things that blew me away, you and I talked about this just kind of, I think, through text. There was a point when he released the fifth song off this record, and I was kind of like, all right, I don't want the whole album before I get the whole album. And I was kind of hesitant to keep listening to the songs because I just didn't want to grow sick of them in any sort of way without hearing the full record. And now that I hear the full record, Thinking of a Place fits so well on there. I said this earlier, but it makes me hear it almost anew again.
Yes.
I would point out, you know, those two songs you mentioned, In Change, I think is the best song of the record. But Pain, song number two, is absolutely devastating. I was listening to that on my drive home from work today. And lyrically, there's a lot of stuff that really resonates with me. And I think it's one of those songs I'm going to just keep listening to and hear the layers of his lyrics intertwine with the hooks that are in there and all the backing music. And I think that has a feeling like a deeper understanding's Eyes to the Wind for me. But then Strangest Thing, that when he like breaks down and goes into that the main hook of the song with just like a tube screamer and just distortion under it, it's absolutely devastating guitar work. It's like you're saying, in terms of David Gilmour, it's it just completely grabs you and it takes a hold of your insides, your everything. It's an unbelievable musical moment.
Why should people listen to this record?
I don't know. Do you have a pulse?
I mean, anyone raised on classic rock, anyone who sat on a porch in a summer night and let a record blast from their speakers, anyone who dreams the possibilities of the open road or believing that music's got some power or necessity, you'll enjoy this record. If you enjoy Beyond the Pond, you'll find something to enjoy in this album. This is not something we should have to sell to you.
Not at all. This is an absolutely fantastic record, a deeper understanding by The War on Drugs. I'm just looking forward to growing old with this record for the rest of the year and for years to come.
I pre-ordered the vinyl.
Same here.
Hoping it shows up at my door. I've got my fingers crossed it comes on Friday so I can put my kid to bed and sit on the couch and drink and sink into the couch and have a cry. Maybe not have a cry, just be happy, you know?
I just have a happy, one of those shit-eating grins, a little bit too drunk, but amazing music cry.
Yeah, not like drinking scotch and listening to like the fourth Walkman album and having like a man cry.
I feel like there's going to be a lot of emotional texting happening on Friday night, and maybe emotional tweeting as we hear this and as the collective Beyond the Pond verse hears this. I have it pre-ordered on vinyl as well, and I will be doing the exact same thing on Friday night. So, hope you guys enjoyed us breaking out our first thoughts here of A Deeper Understanding. Who knows? Maybe in 3 months we'll revisit this and decide that we were completely wrong and the record sucks. But I highly doubt that.
Unlikely. So, on that note, I'm David Goldstein.
I'm Brian Brinkman.
And thank you for joining us for this bonus episode of Beyond the Pond.